This is a football fans podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady, and thanks once again for downloading and listening. So in the last couple of days, we've had the Celtic Underground podcast extra, which was the interviews from the Hamilton game midweek. But prior to that, the last guest we had on was Lachie Moore before the Hibs game. So we've got Lachie Moore back on again after the Hibs game. A bit of tongue-in-cheek saying the 2-2 Hibs victory, because that's the way it was treated by many Celtic fans as well as the media. So we can hardly criticise the press. And then we had the game against Hamilton, which we won, and we've had the Zenit St. Petersburg game, and we've had the fabulous cack-handed letter from Celtic, which I think, and you'll hear in the podcast, I think I know the reason why they did it. I just could have done it a wee bit better. Anyway, all of that will be covered in this week's podcast with myself and Lachie Moore. Of course, there is the usual music going on in the background. If you have a song with a great intro or a cover version that you would like to have on, then email podcast@celticunderground.net. That's podcast@celticunderground.net to get it in. The Spirit of Christmas Celtic Foundation appeal is still ongoing. You might have seen in today's social media the stuff about the Christmas party they had for local school kids. And thanks for everybody who participated in the Light Up Celtic Way. Myself and Remy were two of the collectors. If you were at the North East Corner, you may have scuttered around us as we collected for that. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lachie Moore.
Trying everything new, but nothing impressed me at all. I never expected it to. Don't cry for me, Argentina. Truth is, I never left you. All through my wild days, my mad existence, I kept my promise. Don't keep your distance.
So I'm now joined by Lachie Moore. How are you doing, Lachie?
I'm very well, thanks.
How's the boat in its cosy, comfy house for the winter?
She's high and dry with the heaters aboard.
Okay, so before we start the podcast, we're going to talk about the last week of football. Before we start the podcast, breaking news. It's just coming through on my phone, but it looks like Celtic are going to have a new centre-half.
Who is it?
Hold on a second, I'll just give you some information about him. He's German.
Hi, Leipzig.
He has played for the German national team. I'll tell you how many times. He was born on the 14th of June 1985. He is 6'1".
32 now.
6'1", played one game for Germany in 2008. Borussia Mönchengladbach, Hoffenheim, Fiorentina and Leipzig.
I don't think he's getting a game for Leipzig.
No. So he's a been there, done that centre half. I think that's the way to sum it up.
But he has actually played for Leipzig in the Champions League.
Oh, I don't know.
Right.
Well, there you go. So
can he play for us?
Breaking news. That by the time this goes out, might have been in the papers. He's played 77 times for Leipzig.
Mm-hmm. He played this season. I'm quite sure. I'd read somewhere if we signed him, he couldn't play in the Europa League.
Okay, he played against England.
And he's won international.
And he's won international.
That's the one then, eh?
19th of November 2008, just hopefully that wasn't the game that they won 5-1 under Sven Göran Eriksson.
Well, he better check.
I bet I had check, yeah. So, while I'm checking that, Since we last spoke, we got beaten by Hibs 2-2, and drew however many goals we scored at 3-1 against Hamilton. I'm just going on the press coverage about the way we're going just now. And of course, you will know that you wouldn't have picked up the Hamilton result anyway, because in the same way that the press was wall-to-wall coverage of our penalties against Motherwell, there was virtually no coverage of the Celtic-Hamilton game because of wall-to-wall coverage of the penalty that Hibs should have had against Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there wasn't. Anyway,
Tom English found that it was balanced out by a penalty Rangers should have had on McCrory. He tweeted about that.
Right.
I didn't see that one. I saw the handball.
Well, so let's go more importantly to the Celtic game. So yes. Celtic Hibs, tell us your thoughts on that game.
Well, I think most people would agree that Celtic dominated the game for 75 minutes. I thought in the first half I was very, very frustrated with Sinclair in particular. I think we talked the last time about the fact he never goes for the byline. And maybe my wife I was lecturing about that.
You're lucky, huh?
He runs at pace at people, and you think, well, he's going to go for the line and cut it back, and he never does. And curiously, he did it on Wednesday night, and Cham scored a wonderful goal. So I was able to turn around and say, see, I told you if you go for the byline, you make things happen. But I thought he kept running into people on Saturday or Sunday. And he was very frustrating. And I thought the two goals he scored were good goals because you weren't goals, but I thought it was very fortuitous that he scored two goals. I thought he was almost as bad against them as he was against Anderlecht. But he scored two goals.
I mean, the thing for me about the Celtic-Hibs game was it towards the end of the first half a stat came up about we'd had 80% possession.
Mm.
And you know, there was the Forest miss.
Yeah.
Which you really notice it when they showed you from the camera behind the goals. In order to get it on his right foot, you had to, and I think this is why he then wasn't steady when he hit the ball, you had to run around the ball to then get the angle to be able to hit it with his right foot.
Yeah.
Whereas if he just side-footed with his left, he'd have gone in the bottom corner. Can't be too critical. It's his top scoring season. He's halfway through the season and he's scored more goals than he's ever scored in a single Celtic season.
I mean, he popped up. It looked terrific when he popped up. He looked so good he just put it away. But he didn't.
So
I thought that, I mean, there's been an awful lot of discussion after the Hibs game about the midfield battle between McGinn and Brown. I think when you look at the stats overall, Brown really pretty much dominated it in the way that Brendan said. And Brendan got a bit of stick for saying that, you know, but really when you look at it, if you look at it closely, Brown was the dominant midfield player in the game.
But McGinn's the current hobby horse, the current pet of Scottish football as the next young star who's going to do something. It's Scottish football, so that's why they're talking up McGinn.
But it strikes me that he's strong, he's a good player. Don't get me wrong, he's a good player. He showed against us a couple of times this season that he's a good player. But he's strong, he's quite physical, he's in that mould. But I keep thinking, is he a better footballer than Christie? Is he a better footballer than Callum McGregor? Is he a better footballer than Cham? Is he better than Kouassi? Don't know.
Oh, I would say he's nowhere near in Cham's ability and level. No, not even close to it. So that's out of the equation. It gets back to the analogy I always use is when McFadden was playing for Motherwell and everybody was saying we need to sign McFadden, and I used to say he's no better than Sean Maloney.
Mm-hmm.
Difference is he's playing every week and Sean Maloney can't play every week because we've got Sutton and Hartson and Larson, and if we signed McFadden he wouldn't be in the team ahead of Sean Maloney, so he'd play less games. If Maloney was at Motherwell, he'd be the star of the team. If Callum McGregor was at Hibs, he would be the best player in the Hibs team by some distance.
I mean, I watched the Hibs. I went to see them when they were down the league and they were playing Queen of the South. And in all the games that I watched them, I think Dylan McGeoch contributes at least as much and possibly more than McGinn.
Well,
he never gets the recognition that McGinn gets. But Dylan McGeoch, much as I love him, he's a lovely player, he was never going to get a game for the Celtic.
No, and I know it was last season and they've enhanced their team, but Liam Henderson was a guaranteed starter for Hibs last season and was one of... Speaking to Hibs players, Liam Henderson was their best midfielder last season, and Liam Henderson is what, 55th choice for a midfielder for Celtic Park? I mean, yeah. I'm obviously exaggerating and being facetious, but he's behind Armstrong, McGregor, Rogic, Brown, Kouassi, Ncham, Beaton as a midfielder. He'd be behind Beaton.
Beaton's a better midfield player than him.
Yeah. So Liam Henderson is behind, off the top of my head, and there's probably somebody else that everybody's shouting at me listening to this.
His wee brother.
Aye. He's at least on a par with his wee brother. He's about 8th or 9th choice joint midfielder for Celtic, Liam Henderson, who's a star for Hibs. It's a point I always make. It's very different. Hamilton will have spent 3-4 days preparing for the Celtic game, preparing to play against Celtic, to set up against Celtic. I don't know who Hamilton are playing on Saturday. If they're playing Hibs, they should do, but they will not put the same level of attention into prepping for the Hibs game that they play against Celtic. It's very different. That's why you just need to look at Johnny Hayes, by some distance the star in the Aberdeen team last season, again, fourth choice for his position at Celtic Park. Nothing against Johnny Hayes, but coming to play for Celtic, teams play differently against us. There's a greater expectation. It's a big thing, and I'm not saying that McGinn couldn't make it at Celtic. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying I don't see that he would be doing anything other than bringing in a squad player who's on a par with our fourth, fifth choice midfielders at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an automatic pick for Hibs, and rightly so. And because he is, and he's in the public eye, he's going to get capped for Scotland more and more. But he wouldn't be an automatic pick for Celtic.
No, he absolutely wouldn't, because I don't think he's as good as Callum McGregor, so he's behind Callum McGregor in the team. So,
he's got an aggressive style about him that catches the eye. You know, he's vigorous and he's energetic in a way that perhaps other players don't show. And the business of competing with Brown, it's almost like an audition for him. So he's up for the audition. But it reminded me a lot at the beginning of Brown versus Lennon.
Yeah.
Well, Lennon admitted over the piece, he never liked playing against Brown because he was a very combative player. I don't remember Brown and Lennon losing any midfield battles with Brown. You know, they went toe to toe. And I thought Brown was the best player in the Pats at the weekend.
The thing you've got to be careful with as well is, are we judging a player based on the ties that he plays against Celtic?
No, I think to be fair, he plays well against other teams. He's not a guy who just ups his game for Celtic. I think he's a stick out every week for them, or most weeks.
I'm just saying, you know, it's like Celtic fans thinking that Scott Brown was a goal scoring midfielder.
When he
left Hibs, because he scored 13 goals at Hibs, and something like 7 of them were against Celtic. You know.
Mm-hmm. So I remember going to a game once in. Maloney was playing. It was still the Hibs game, obviously, and it was the time of the twins. The talk about signing the twins. Remember Thompson and Brown, and there was talk that we were going to get them. Then there was talk that the Paris Buns were going to get them. And I remember on the game I was at, thinking Thompson looks a better player than Brown.
Uh huh.
But in actual fact, he wasn't.
I'm the same as you. I remember seeing both of them. And there was talk of £6 million, whatever it was, for both of them. And being stunned that Brown was worth double what Thompson was, because I thought Thompson was more of a Paul Lambert type player.
Yes. Neither economical with the ball, didn't get involved in physical challenges. You know, I know exactly what you mean.
What do we know? So back to the Hibs game. So we're 2-0 up. Maloney, that's because we're talking about Forrest, should have scored very early on. We're 2-0 up and coasting, and then we have the goal chopped off, which, see, if Forrest releases the ball half a second earlier, Sinclair's onside.
Yeah.
And then we have another couple of chances where we could have, we could have easily been 5-5 up. And then Hibs got a corner kick, and one pass, they took a short corner that we were a bit sleeping for, and then one pass took three of our players out.
Yeah. The concentration in the corner kick was awful.
Yep.
Even allow the short corner to happen in the way it did. But even there was a touch of fortune about the goal when Effie hit it, I'm sure it hit somebody on the way in, if I remember rightly. It didn't go flying in like a rocket or anything. But I still thought they would go on to win it. And in actual fact, if you look at the last 15 minutes, the people would have you believe that it was this end-to-end battle with chances being made at each end. In real terms, they had two more chances to score with one of them. Celtic had at least two more chances, possibly three, and missed them all.
Then they make it two each.
Aye.
And then, now, at times I think some of the Celtic support have been exceptionally harsh on Craig Gordon.
Well, do you know what? I turned around and I said to Irene, I says, what were we talking about in that podcast last week? When it gets tight, when the tension comes on, there are certain players who make mistakes.
Mental aberrations.
The goalkeeper. What on earth was he doing out there?
He did, and as we talked about in the podcast, there's a couple of games where we beat Hearts when he was the goalkeeper where he dropped the ball. And he had a mental aberration. And this is where sometimes when people are talking about technical ability at the highest level, it's they've actually got the technical ability to play at the highest level. It's the mentality to then have confidence in that technical ability when they play at the higher level. And he just dropped the ball, and a fantastic saving challenge by Lustig.
If you're going to come for it, at least get it.
Yep.
Why was it there in the first place? I'll never know.
Well, I suspect, and again, this is what we were talking about last week, it's his decision-making.
I guess.
In those instances when the game's tight, it's in the last minute or two, and the game's, you know, it can go either way. He has the mental aberrations. And obviously his thought process was, if I just go and claim this and take it, there's no danger. The amazing thing actually is, in the final 30, 40 seconds of the game, both teams could have won it.
Yes.
Both teams probably should have won it.
Yeah. Boyata's header was not a good header, considering where he was.
There was three Celtic players. I mean, patently, he gave a shout because there's three Celtic players at the last second pulled out to allow him to have his header.
Yeah.
And
something else, though. I don't know if we talked about it before. When Gordon comes and claims a cross, and then he runs vigorously as if he's not going to release the ball, and he never does. And he did that a couple of times on the game on Saturday or Sunday. He came and took the ball beautifully in the air and rushed out as if he's going to release it quickly and we're on the counter attack. And then he doesn't. And then we're back to the kick out or the roll out to the side, but everybody's back. Now, I watched a game the other night, Leicester City were playing. And I mean, on the break, they were like greyhounds. But a lot of it comes from the fact that as soon as a goalkeeper gets the ball, he has it away. He throws it, he rolls it, he kicks it quickly, and they get away quickly, the defence gets back. He never lets us out quickly, Craig Gordon. Never does it. You know, I think by his stage of his career, the experience he's got, he should be able to read the sign where a quick throw turns defence into attack, and he never does it.
I suppose it might well be reading the body language. It was, somebody was telling me about certain players, someone who knows about the game, he was telling me about certain players that he identifies in those types of situations. And just by their body language, they're making it obvious that they don't want the ball. And their positioning makes it obvious that they look like they want the ball, but they don't actually want the ball.
No, I think a lot of people felt that against Anderlecht about Stuart Armstrong. But I'm talking about a situation where he has the ball and doesn't do what a really good goalkeeper would do.
No, but that's what I'm saying, because his options are limited.
You think so?
Because the people who he should be passing it to are not making themselves available for it.
Perhaps.
I'm just suggesting. I'm not saying it's the case. I'm just suggesting.
Yeah, I take your point there. Because invariably the cover closes in on the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So you don't see the whole pitch. But it strikes me that the number of times he does collect good crosses and he rushes out, but the ball never gets released. There has to be some times he can throw it.
Well, yeah, I have seen him do it a couple of times recently of a throw out, mainly at Celtic Park.
Have you?
Aye. He did it a couple of times on Wednesday night against Hamilton.
I've only seen the highlights of the Hamilton.
Well, so to finish on the Hibs game, so we finished 2-2 in a game that we should have scored more.
Yes.
I thought the reaction of some Celtic supporters was not giving me confidence about how we react whenever we do lose a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that you can't criticise. We've just had a bit of criticism of Celtic players, and I'm not saying you can't criticise, and obviously we shouldn't be 2-0 up away from home with 15-20 minutes to go and not winning a game, right? We should be closing that game out, winning it, and we should have taken the chances, and yes, obviously. But some of the way, you know, I read something, and I really don't think the guy was saying it tongue-in-cheek, a guy saying, that was a ridiculous result. We are so much better than the rest of Scottish football that we should not be dropping points. You know, last season was a 1 in 100 season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people making comments, Celtic have already dropped more points than they lost in the whole of last season. They're going backwards. No, last season was just such an exceptional 1 in 100 season. We were never, ever, ever, ever going to be doing better than last season. What, only draw 3 games, only draw 2 games and win every other game? I just think some people went a bit OTT after.
I did too, but I think it's fair to say they're not playing as well this season, at this point in the season, as they were last season.
Well, I was thinking back to performances and what was missing, and I was thinking about how last season after the Rangers game, Dembele was a tour de force at the top of the team.
Yeah.
And I feel Sinclair's best games are when Dembele's having a good game.
Mm-hmm.
So Dembele's been in and out and not had that many great performances. So last season, if you think about it, when Dembele didn't play for the last 3 months of the season, people were talking about Sinclair disappeared for the last 3 months of the season. So
yep.
If Sinclair plays better when Dembele's in the team and playing well, and Dembele hasn't been in the team playing well, Sinclair's not been playing well. Paddy Roberts in and out with injury, and Rogic has been in and out.
But the other factor that you need to consider in the way that Sinclair's playing, if you're being generous, is the fact that neither is a left back. Hmm. They're all, he's a marvellous player for his age and massive potential. He has not played well in recent weeks by his standards. And the link-up play that was a feature of their play hasn't been to the fore since they played Aberdeen.
But in general, for me, the players who've not performed at their best have been the sort of front four section of the team.
in terms of Sinclair, there was a tremendous combination between him and Tierney.
Yeah, but he still needs a striker who's on form in front of him.
And he's not getting support for him either.
If you got to be careful, if every move has got to go out wide, then it becomes a bit more defensible, it's easier to defend against Celtic because you know that they're going to go out wide to either Sinclair or Forrest. So for me, the bit that's missing in terms of what we really need to sign is a number 10, a really creative number 10. Because at the moment, McGregor's the number 10 who, much as we praised McGregor earlier in the podcast, he's a workman-like midfielder who closes down space. He occasionally has a fantastic pass and he can put the ball in the back of the net. But he's not what I would call a creative number 10. And I think that's what we're missing.
And Rogic isn't playing well.
No, and Rogic isn't playing well at all. He's hardly featuring a lot of the time.
When they go wide, my complaint is, I've been on about it for ages, about Sinclair is that he always wants to come inside. Whereas the other night, he showed if you go for the line, it's another option.
Yeah, but that's because the system that we play, getting back to your Tierney comment, is he is to cut inside because Tierney's going to go down the line. On Wednesday night, we played with a back three, which meant there was no fullback to go beyond him, which meant his job was to then go to the byline.
And he made a goal.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
Does he do it?
It's partly to do with the system.
It's not all to do with the system.
No, what I mean by that is
against the fullback.
Yeah, but on Wednesday night,
inside or outside, he always goes inside. Whereas he has the pace to go outside and cross it with his left foot, and he won't do it.
He's been told not to do it. Is my point.
He's not told not to do it.
If he's been told the system is you cut inside and Tierney goes round the outside of you.
It's not that programmed. I mean, I know what you're saying in general terms, the pattern of the play may be like that, but when you're coming up against Anderlecht, for example, when he was coming up to that full back at pace and the guy was on his heels, he should just have gone past him. And he kept cutting back in. Now, the other night, he went by the guy, cut it back, as you see other top-class left-sided left wingers doing, and you get a goal out of it. A beautiful goal, too.
It was a good goal. So
you don't always need to go inside.
No, I'm just saying that if that's part of the instruction to him, that you have to go inside and Tierney on the outside, part of the reason why he would have been going outside more on Wednesday night was because we played three at the back.
Perhaps.
And so
I just got the impression that he always comes inside because he wants to score.
Well, I think he does, and I think that's why he scored whatever it was, 20 odd goals last season. Not helped by the fact that we, you know.
But we've talked in the past, not recently, but in the past, when you asked me about my estimation of Sinclair, I pointed out that from where I sit, he doesn't make many goals. And that was when he was in full flood.
Well, that's why Sinclair was fourth or fifth in my top 10 last year. You know, of his 20 odd goals, what was it, 9 or 10 of them were penalties?
Oh, I don't mean that. I'm not criticising him for that. I'm talking about although he was a goal scoring winger, his job is basically to create goals as well. And he didn't do that. But he could.
He
wasn't obsessed by coming inside to have these wonderful shots that he often releases. I think he did one the other night. It was not a tremendous save from it when he came inside and curled it.
Got a goal from doing that.
I scored twice the other night, didn't I?
So if we go to Wednesday night, after the game against Hibs, actually, I was wondering if Brendan would change the system on Wednesday night against Hamilton just to freshen the team up, to get them thinking differently, that maybe they were in a bit of a routine of doing the same thing week in, week out in Scottish football, change things up. So we went with Ayer, Beaton and Boyata at the back. Mm-hmm. So no Tierney, no Simonovic, no Lustig. And Cham was in the middle of the park, with Armstrong back in as well, and Brown and McGregor, and with Forrest and Sinclair and Edouard. So what did you make of the performance of what you saw on Wednesday night?
Well, it looked to me as if Edward was playing off not too badly. What concerned me from just watching the highlights was how easily they were opened up in the second half on the break. So he may have reshuffled his defence, but I don't think they looked convincing. And I mean, Simonovic made a gross error at one time.
In defence, what I would say from watching the highlights, if you say how easily we were opened up, if we were opened up in the highlights three times, we were opened up three times in the whole game. You know, like
that you've seen that. You don't see that. I haven't had time to watch the whole program, the whole Celtic TV, and they provided highlights quite quickly, so I watched them. But it looked in the highlights as if they were under serious pressure at times.
No, there was the one where because I get quite agitated in the second half because Boyata had been stretching his hamstring, and then when we changed Edward for Griffiths, we were also about to bring on Johnny Hayes.
Uh-huh.
And Johnny Hayes was getting stripped, and Scott Brown is waving frantically, and obviously the dugout are looking down at, you know, another part of the pitch, and Scott Brown's waving frantically to the dugout to signal that Boyata's injured, and Boyata then starts doing the rolling hands thing to symbolise that he needs to go off. It was a free kick. So they then sent Simonovic straight to warm up, and Johnny Hayes got told to get his stuff back on.
Uh-huh.
Then play went on for 2 or 3 minutes, and we were up the other end of the park, and then Hamilton got a break where they got down to the byline and they skinned Boyata, because by this point Boyata could hardly walk. And at that point...
That's so obvious for the highlights. He was injured.
Yeah, so but this, at that point, Boyata had already signalled to the bench that he needed to go off.
Right.
And was already... could hardly walk at that point. So it probably looks worse in the highlights because we've got a centre-half who'd already was trying to go off the park. That prompted Brendan to whistle for Simonovic to hurry up. Simonovic then got ready to come on the park as quickly as my 7-year-old gets ready for school in the mornings. Obviously highly motivated to come on the park on a freezing cold night, he was. And then I got really annoyed because we're trying to get Simonovic dressed as quickly as he will do it very slowly, and Gordon takes a quick goal kick when Boyata can hardly walk, and then the ball plays up to Brown, who was the person who spotted Boyata was injured, and Brown then takes a quick free kick. We had two occasions to stop play and fart around for half an hour while Simonovic took his time getting changed and get Boyata off, and we took two quick getting the ball back into play. I thought it was really stupid football from experienced players and Gordon and Brown at that point.
It just made me want to go back and watch. I'll probably do it after we finish. I'll go and watch it on Celtic TV.
So there was that. And then the other chance that Hamilton had, when they should have scored when they hit the post, was when Simonovic, continuing his lackadaisical getting changed style.
Sure. He was as energetic at that point as he was trying to stop that young Hibs player, an equaliser. He was static on Sunday.
I could be prejudiced here only because I've heard so many tales about the fact that he wants to leave. But he does look to me like a player who's, when he makes himself available, is going through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about some of the games we've played of late where there's been a bit of criticism of Boyata games, and I thought nobody said that Simonovic played badly or played well, because all Simonovic is doing in games is getting the ball and giving it to Boyata. He's doing nothing else. So Boyata then makes a mistake playing the ball out. That's only because he's doing something proactive that you can see him making a mistake. Simonovic is just, for me, Simonovic is just coasting through games, doing just what he needs to.
Yeah. There was a blog I read yesterday on, it was a link from Twitter, a guy had done an analysis of the game, and he was looking at Boyata's passing statistics, and he had a 93% completion rate, and he said, yeah, you could excuse that by saying he only makes safe passes. And he said, well, that's what you want him to do. his job isn't to create the dynamic midfield attacks, except on the very odd occasion. So the criticism that he gives the ball away is often when he's forced into it, and he's trying to make a pass that he's not capable of doing. I mean, I heard somebody today, I was on a podcast that's also dear to your heart, talking about the passing prowess of Virgil. I remember Virgil having some real warmers. He wasn't always wonderful, you know.
I do remember a couple of games in Europe where we lost goals, and in the first review people were criticising Effie, and then when the replay was shown, it was Virgil had played a guy onside for being lackadaisical coming out from the back.
Virgil was not gold plated or copper plated in terms of reliability. He had great talent, but he made a lot of errors. I thought that when he was Inter Milan, he got himself ordered off. Remember over in the I thought that was quite willful the way he did that night. I thought I'd be glad to see the back of him.
Well, I'll be glad if Liverpool eventually do sign him from Southampton and we get £10 million in the pot. That'd be another thing I'd be glad of.
I watch him at Match of the Day, and I often sit, and I normally watch my highlights because I don't watch the games through on English television on Sky, even though I've got it on BT either. I don't watch on that either. But on the highlights, I often think, you're not as good as you think you are, Virgil. And I look at Chata and the criticism he comes in for, and I honestly think he's a more honest player than Virgil. Well, Virgil, more talent.
My part of meditation, and I think I tweeted about him Wednesday night, was, you know, in terms of in footballing sense, Scotland is England's a foreign country to Scotland, mm-hmm. from a footballing perspective. And on Wednesday night, after we'd had a full SPL calendar, or SPFL calendar, over two nights, Tuesday night and Wednesday night, 11 o'clock on Wednesday night, our national broadcaster is showing, as I say, in footballing terms, the highlights of a foreign league.
That's right.
And
extended highlights.
Domestic football in Scotland. Domestic football, midweek domestic football fixtures in Scotland do not exist in relation to TV highlights packages. But the reason I mention that, watched a bit of the Leicester-Southampton game. Fraser Foster was Southampton's man of the match, and Leicester comfortably won that game.
I hear, again, a discussion in a podcast, and you're like, well, I like it too because I listen to it, but you know something.
You can talk about Lawrence and Remy, it's okay, you can advertise another podcast. We do not monetize this podcast, so you don't mind giving other people publicity.
They actually said that Fraser Foster had gone back as a goalkeeper, and yet when I watch him, he saves them from doings every week.
I genuinely don't watch enough English football to know.
I sit and I watch and I think, how does that Joe Hart get in the team before Fraser Foster?
Well, I don't rate Joe Hart at all.
I made a comment the other day about on the podcast today about he's now coached by the England goalkeeper coach and he has regressed. But I don't think, in terms of his ability to make saves, he's regressed. In fact, if Southampton didn't have Fraser Foster, they'd be deep in relegation trouble.
I mean, the only thing I would say, from what I saw on Wednesday night of him, it was a lot of parried saves inside the 6-yard box. There was no, you know, he wasn't outside the 6-yard box. And that's largely a symptom of the team that you play for. If you play for Celtic, it's a very, very different goalkeeping proposition than if you play for Southampton, because playing for Celtic, in general, when teams attack against us, we've only got two or three defenders back. It will be a move on the break at pace because we're up the other end of the pitch, mm-hmm. and you might need to be in control of your whole 18-yard box and come out and try and deal with a guy because he's broken through a back two. Whereas if you're playing for Southampton, it's just a different proposition. So, it, you know, it could be, I don't know. I don't watch enough English football.
I watched the night he played against Barcelona at Celtic Park, when he was absolutely brilliant, stopping shot after shot.
Yeah.
And it's like watching most games in Southampton playing in terms of the goalkeeper. Because the shots come flying at him from all angles, and he does everything he can to save them. So I'm not sure what areas they think he's regressed. Because in terms of his shot stopping, he still strikes me as being one of the better goalkeepers in that league, and far better than the guy who's in the England jersey.
Oh, he's useless. So the one thing there. So were you surprised that we changed our shape? And we, you know, what are your thoughts on the fact that Ayer? A lot of people seem to be wanting Ayer to get a run in the team. In Cham again, I thought he's really now starting to settle in as a controlling midfielder. What were your thoughts on the bits you saw?
Didn't see much of that. I wasn't even aware that Ayer was playing a kind of right back position until Brendan talked about it. He suggested that someone asked, I think it was a commentator, that said, what did you make of Christopher Ayer's right back? And I thought, right back? But now you've explained it was a back three, so he was in the right of a three.
Aye.
And
the second half, that was the other thing that we did. That Brendan made comment at the end of the game about, you know, when we went to 3-1, we did what we hadn't learned on. I felt Edouard had a couple of chances in the second half.
Yeah.
And maybe if he played every week, or, you know, if he'd had a longer run in the team, he might have taken one of those chances. And when he went off and Griffiths came on, I can't think of another chance we had in the game. And I got the impression that it was a bit of a practice run for shutting a game out. Mm-hmm. And we went to more of a four. It wasn't quite, but it was more of a, when we were defending, Callum McGregor came a lot deeper almost to a left-back position, and I went a bit wider out to almost a right-back position. And we just sort of shut the game out, apart from when Simonovic gave them the chance and they hit the post and they should have scored.
Mm-hmm. I thought that, that one of the chances that it showed you on the highlights package of Edouard, he actually played it brilliantly. The goalkeeper made a good save.
Yeah. So we won that game, and then prior, between the Hibs and the Hamilton game, we drew Zenit St. Petersburg in the Europa League. Uh-huh. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I imagine it'll be a powerful side, but they're coming out of a winter break, so that may be something in our favour. We don't know.
Yeah, all I mean, their next game is against Celtic.
All the teams that were in that draw would have given us a game. What's important is that we give them a game. And that was the disappointing thing about the Anderlecht tie, that we didn't compete with them a bit more. I know we did what we had to do and got through, but I would have been happier if we'd drawn or won that game. Because we could have made a statement before going into the Europa League. I noticed Mancini was quite, he praiseworthy of the Celtic. You still there?
Yes, I am.
Because you're not moving.
No, I'm still here.
I thought you'd frozen again. Remember last time the whole thing froze?
No, I was going to check.
Cause I wanted to know about Zenit St. Petersburg.
Well, last time we were in the last 32, Mancini was the manager of the team we played. Last time we were in the last 32.
So he was, that's right.
And Zenit St. Petersburg have got the most expensive stadium in the world.
I saw some of the people, in fact, it was their official podcast, official Twitter account, tweeted a picture of their beautiful stadium and said, you'll be welcome here, and we've got a roof, so you'll be warm. It won't be terribly cold the way you think it might be, because we have a roof, we can bring the roof over. But I believe some of the stadium will be empty.
Yeah.
Because banned.
Yeah, for racism. So their next game is against us. They've already played their last game before playing us.
Right.
Their squad is worth about 150 million quid.
Yeah.
And I was looking, I knew Vladimir Putin was from St. Petersburg. So I was just looking to see if he was actually a St. Petersburg fan or whether he had no interest in football. So that's why I was just checking on my phone, so I can't really tell checking, because obviously you do have to be careful with them now that Russia's back, no longer a democracy and ruled by a
and a bit of a dictator, that there might be some money going left, right and centre to make sure they win games. So you've got to be careful for that type of thing as well.
That happens in other countries, not just countries run by despots.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, in the UK, teams have been known to use government funding up to £80-90 million of taxes that they don't pay just to try and win trophies. So
I've heard of that.
Yes, it can happen anywhere. So that's a draw. As you say, any team we played would have given us a game.
I'd seen them playing in the Champions League. They were in the Champions League, weren't they? It was the Champions League they were in.
Yeah.
And they get beaten as much as we get beaten, I think. I think we were qualified. You just get the impression that Russian teams have all got loads and loads of money. And they see there's loads of Brazilians and Argentines and people playing for them, so you just assume they're good teams.
Yep.
They have Argentines playing for them, don't they?
I do, because the bit when I was just googling just now, when I was trying to do my research to find out whether Putin is a Zenit fan or not, I did come across a piece where he's criticised the president of Zenit for not fielding enough Russian players.
You wonder why their fans are a wee bit prejudiced.
So, Zenit started against Real Sociedad with three Russians, five Argentinians, a Slovenian, a Serbian and an Italian, and three Russians came on as substitutes.
Five Argentinians.
The Russian league allows six non-Russians on the pitch at any time. So
I've obviously been following the Mark Cooper model of scouting players.
Well, you know, it would be really nice if we actually bought. Well, Comper is what I think a lot of people are looking for. They're looking for a guy who has been there, done that centre half. I would like a been there, done that centre half, another maybe a bit younger centre half that's part of our modelling system, and a number 10. And I believe we were at the Astana Slavia game a couple of weeks ago to look at the Astana guy whose name escapes me. He's TW something, his surname, and he can play wide right or number 10. And we looked at him, and apparently we're not going for him, having looked at him, so I don't know whether it's the price is too high or we ruled him out after seeing him in person, but I believe it's not him. And again, we're back for the Belgian guy who's at Chelsea, Masonda. Is it Masonda?
Aye, I remember. He was on his quote at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, so again, we're back being quoted for him again.
That'd be a loan deal, would it not?
Who knows? I don't know.
That guy, I remember you were talking about a slightly younger Kolaturi.
Yes, that's what I said last week. I'd want a younger Kolaturi.
Is that guy? Kolaturi was a fabulous player of his day.
Well, when I say Kolaturi, what I mean is a player who has played at the highest level and has got experience.
Has that guy played at the highest level?
Well, he's played in the German Bundesliga most of his career.
I suppose so, yeah. He's not a sticker. I suppose if he had 40 international caps, he wouldn't have come at himself.
Well, that would be my point at you know, 30 years of age.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he is. He's 32 years if he was born in 85. Yep. So he's not spring chicken.
No.
Now, this one we bought, that age profile was Nestorovic, and he was a diddy.
Lawrence Donegan likes him.
Oh, he was hopeless. I mean, the best well in the world, he was hopeless.
So the other thing is, did you get your letter from Celtic? Oh, you're not a season book holder, are you?
Season book holder, no. No, but I've been following it. And I got engaged in a debate on Twitter with a guy who was talking about drama queens. And I thought, is he referring directly to me or is he including others? Because I was trying to make the point that they're taking a sledgehammer to break an egg. You know, it just seemed ludicrous to me, apart from the cost of it, which I believe runs into something £26,000. Because each stamp was 52p. And every season book holder would get one. But it just seemed to me, and I said to John Paul on Twitter, and he actually liked the tweet, you know, he acknowledged it. If you've got specific problems in this area, for example, I get tickets sometimes from one of the guys in Dumfries, and he has a pensioner's ticket and an adult ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have any qualms about taking Isaac, my grandson, who's only 13, on the adult ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he had a child's ticket, it would be cheaper.
Yep.
So I'm not doing the Celtic. But I wouldn't take, I wouldn't think you should be using the pensioner's ticket if you're not a pensioner.
Yeah.
As an abuse. Or taking your child's ticket for your pal, who's a man. You know, I think if you're going to transfer tickets, it should be within the category.
Or the same price, because, you know, my dad's
price range.
My dad's got an OAP ticket, a child's ticket's the same price or slightly, you know, certain, I think, cheaper. Yeah.
They're interchangeable. The adult tickets, folks shouldn't be taking a pensioner's ticket if they're 28.
And that's my point. They've used it's such a ham-fisted letter. As you say, hammer to crack a nut. I get it. So, there's two main things that have been happening. Somebody lends somebody else their ticket. Uh-huh. And for whatever reason, it's not working that day. There's uh-huh. a problem with the ticket.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they go down to the ticket office and they say, my ticket's not working. And the ticket office obviously want to make sure that you've just not nicked the ticket.
Uh-huh.
So they ask you, have you got any proof of ID on you that you are who you are? And uh-huh. the person turns around and says, no, because that's not my ticket.
Uh-huh.
Right, well, point number one, see what Celtic set out in the letter. It's the uh-huh. terms and conditions of any ticket you buy for anything. You buy a ticket for the theatre and it will say, this ticket is non-transferable and is only to be utilised by the purchaser of the ticket. Because these are bog standard ticketing terms and conditions, right? So Celtic's defence would be, all we did was write to everybody and tell them what's on their ticket anyway on the terms and conditions, which is true, right? And so people are turning up at the ticket office. They're saying, this isn't my ticket. And so the Celtic ticket office is saying, well, we can't help you then because it's not your ticket. We can't help you with it. Then the person's starting to get agitated. There's a big long queue behind them of people trying to pick up their ticket for the match day. And the Celtic ticket, so that apparently there have been occasions where tempers then start to fray and people start shouting and swearing at the ticket office staff. And then the other one is the incident you use of, you know, as my dad was reminding me in a phone call I had tonight, a couple of years ago, he had to go to the Celtic ticket office to prove that, you know, they sent a letter out to people with OAP tickets saying, we just need a fresh verification. And so can you bring me your passport or your birth certificate to prove that you're verified? And so your point of people who've been given concession tickets to full price people.
Yes.
So I get that that's an issue. They're maybe approaching... There's a couple of big games. There's the Rangers game on the 30th, and then it'll be the Zenit game. And so there's some big games coming up, and there's the Aberdeen games. So there's some big games coming up. And I just wanted to remind people that if there's issues on those days, and it's not the person using the ticket, it'll be dealt with quickly, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
But I just can't believe that somebody wrote that, and then somebody will have approved that before it went out. That'll have been written by one person and approved by somebody else, and two people, the second person being more senior, will, yep, that's good, send it out.
I hadn't considered the one about the ticket not working and then you not being able to prove it was your ticket. I wondered how these things had arisen. I thought it was more likely that someone was trying to get in on a pensioner's ticket or a boy's ticket something, and they'd been pulled up. I remember, we bought tickets for the Aberdeen game. Anthony bought tickets online for the Aberdeen game and I printed them off. And I was saying, how do they know who's who, you know?
Do you know what, this is the other thing that I think is ridiculous or think is silly. See, if you get, when you get a ticket for Ibrox, your name's written on it in pen. Your actual name of the person who's bought the ticket is written on it in pen. Now, two things. That's part of the, you know, that's part of these terms and conditions. It's bought by use, not interchangeable, blah, blah, blah. Nobody ever says, you know, to the 7,500 Celtic fans going in the Broomloan stand, show me your driver's licence or passport along with your ticket before you go in. Right? Uh-huh. So people don't do that. So then the other side of that is, what a complete, getting back to your 20-odd thousand pounds for the ticket, what a complete waste of resources. There's some people in the ticket office when we play Rangers write names on tickets. I can't think if they do it on other ones. It's just I only ever notice it for Rangers games. It's probably on other ones and I just haven't paid attention because it's not such a big game. There's somebody in the ticket office writes, or there's a group of people obviously, 7,500 names on tickets.
Uh-huh.
In terms of what a waste of time.
Could they not have done that by email? I put it on the website.
Well,
I can't imagine any Celtic supporters who don't look at the website.
Well, I think it was partly, well, I really look at the Celtic website.
Well, I mean, I look at it every day just to see what the news is.
It would be
through the Twitter
account. By sending out a letter, it allows Celtic to, it allows if an incident arises and somebody has their ticket withheld from them for breaking the terms and conditions on the concession thing that we've talked about, or because they've given the ticket to somebody and that person causes trouble on a match day and they lose their ticket and they turn around and say, but wait a minute, I gave it to my mate, you can't withdraw. It allows Celtic to say, well, we wrote to you about it. Well, I didn't get it. Well, we wrote to everybody.
I did say today that if you lend a ticket to someone and they misbehave, then you're responsible. And, you know, you should be more careful who you give the ticket to. So if you lose a ticket because you give it to somebody who doesn't behave, that's your problem. But I did think that in some way they should have some sort of like acknowledgement and not just ignore it and it doesn't happen, but it actually acknowledge that families buy tickets.
Yeah, but then that's in breach of the that's in breach of the terms and conditions of all tickets. So they can't acknowledge it.
It was all tickets.
What?
I didn't realise if I bought a ticket for the theatre. Like, tonight, my daughter said, you've got to go and see Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'll never go during the week. But say I went online today and bought tickets and gave them to Isaac. He never bought the tickets.
Oh,
I'm just Googling
theatre ticket terms and conditions, see if I can find some bog standard terms and conditions of a ticket. Bloody, I need my glasses to read it, for goodness sake. Contract terms, or this is far too boring for me to read through and look it up. Delivery, changes to event, cancelled, refund, liability, after sales, use of details, resale of ticket. Maybe it might come up in that one, resale of ticket. You may not resell or transfer a ticket. Any resale or transfer or attempted resale or transfer of a ticket in breach of the applicable law is grounds for seizure or cancellation of that ticket. So a transfer is not, you know, not, is not a resale, that's just giving it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's me going on to atgtickets.com, which is most theatre tickets.
So did you notice the tweet today about Fergus's tickets?
Yeah, I did.
The day after they advertised Fergus's tickets as a prize, they then tell you you're not allowed to give your ticket to anyone else.
So I think it's just one of these things where they're, as I say, ham-fisted. It's a ham-fisted way of Celtic trying to make sure that they have covered for an eventuality that might arise down the line, and they've managed to do it in such a crass way to irritate people.
Yeah, I noticed a guy last week, more than one guy outside the Anderlecht game, standing holding their season ticket up in the air as if...
Yeah, I've seen people doing that, which really surprised me.
When I told my wife about it, she says to me, how do they get the ticket back? I said, I don't know how they do it. I don't know whether they go in the same turnstile and the guy returns the ticket right away. Don't know what the gig is at all.
I don't know. They must arrange to meet up. So we've got enough of the tickets for the few people who are still listening after ticket gate.
You've actually explained it a bit better. I can see a point in it now, whereas this morning I couldn't.
Thanks. I'll just take my commission from Celtic for being there. I'll take them on customer service training.
Tell John Paul we did it.
Oh, do you know, I tell you what, I wouldn't thank anyone for a job. In theory, wouldn't it be great to work at Celtic Park? I wouldn't thank anyone for a job at Celtic Park. I wouldn't want to work there. I think it could at times ruin your enjoyment of being a Celtic fan at times.
See, when Fergus came and they opened the North Stand,
yep,
and they announced you could buy a season ticket, I applied right away. And weeks went by and I hadn't heard anything about it. And I went up to the ticket office one day and Irene waited in the car and I stood very patiently in a long queue. And I got in and there was a guy and he was calling the ticket office guy for everything because he hadn't had his effing ticket through and he sent in his effing money, you know. And I'm standing there, that's all. Oh, well, that's not the way you do it, you know. However, a guy managed to quiet him down and send him on his way. And then I got a letter 10 days later saying I was unsuccessful in getting a ticket. I was raging. So I wrote, and the curious thing was, they sent me tickets for the Newcastle game. Remember Ginola played?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Andy Tom's first game. They sent me tickets for that because it was on the season book. So I get tickets in the main stand for the Newcastle game. So I'm saying, don't worry about it, Gwaines. We're okay. Our tickets are coming because they've sent us tickets for the Newcastle game. Then I get this letter saying I was unsuccessful in the ballot and I wouldn't be getting a season book. So I wrote to Fergus. I was really angry about it. I says, I stood there and I watched guys abusing your staff and they were doing everything they could to pacify these morons and I was standing patiently by doing my good citizen bit and I don't get a ticket. So shortly after that he wrote to me, he wrote to everybody, but to see he was opening the stand, remember
the temporary stand? Yeah.
So we were in the temporary stand for a couple of seasons so we eventually got our season tickets through. Actually, it was great fun in the temporary stand. It was great fun. You got soaked, but it was great fun.
So we've got Hearts on Sunday, who Hearts have now managed to win a couple of games under Craig Levein. What's your thoughts about that game?
Oh, I think if Celtic play the way Celtic can play, they will win the game. But I thought that on Saturday and Sunday too. I expected them to beat the Hibs because I thought they were a better team than Hibs. If they're a better team than Hibs, they're surely a better team than Hearts.
Oh, aye.
But I suspect the Hearts will adopt, although there was a physical battle in midfield between Brown and McGinn, it was never a dirty game at any time. I suspect it might be a tousy struggle on Sunday. The atmosphere will be quite hostile.
I've not seen Hearts play recently. But the bits I've heard about, because they've been not winning games, the last couple of games that they've won were about 15 minutes to go. They played with nobody up front and, you know, basically like a 6-4-0 formation.
Yeah. I saw that Lafferty creature playing against the Hibs and he elbowed Effie Ambrose right in the face. He turned round, waited for him coming. Effie won the ball and he laid him out. And I think there'll be a lot of that going on with him, in particular on Saturday and Sunday, because I think he's a nasty piece of work.
So what's your prediction for the score?
Oh, a waste of time predicting the score. Really is.
Well, with that bombshell,
I thought it'd be 3-0 last Sunday. You know, when the Sinclair goal went in, I thought, aye, I was right.
Well, if a Sinclair goal had gone in, we probably would have petered out.
But probably would have been 5-0.
Aye. Anyway.
But as usual, I think if they play, they'll win.
Okay. Well, with that, I will say, Lackey Moore, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast. And as always, there'll be more podcasts along soon. It's just enough for me to say, hopefully we will have a podcast between now and Christmas. In fact, pretty certain we'll have a podcast between now and Christmas. But just in case it doesn't, can I just say, have a very Merry Christmas. But probably we will, so I'll be saying that again later. Anyway, this is me, Harry Beery, saying goodnight and God bless. Oh, and the songs are...
Yes, senor, no, you're in, senor, up, you're up, senor, down, you're wrong, and it's right, black and it's white, be white, be break up, be kiss, be makeup. You don't really want to stay, no.
To quote the now disgraced star of my childhood, can you guess what it is yet? So... These songs are, first one was Sinead O'Connor, Don't Cry For Me Argentina, that was for Hullboy, who tweeted asking for a song by Sinead O'Connor. Well, he actually said a song by a woman, preferably Sinead O'Connor, so there you go, cover version by Sinead O'Connor. And then the other one is thanks to Mr. McKenzie at Bobby Wan on Twitter, who has got, because we've drawn Zenit, the Russian band Los Colorados, with hot and with a cover of Katy Perry's Hot and Cold. Thanks to everybody who made suggestions. Ian, Glasgow Boy, with Quadrophenians. Lackey, who then tweeted back in for Mark Knopfler. Paul PT McD92. Timothy McLevy. Stephen Craig. Electric Cocoa. Love all your tweets, mate. Baras Bravas. Mr. Jazz Tim. Brian Craig, Jushin Thunderlager, Celtic Research, Joe Blog City, John Joe, Brian Steele, Ewan Mushet, everybody who tweeted in. So I've taken a note of all of these, and they'll be on the list for the rest of the season. But enough of me. This is me, Harry Beery, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight.
It's my drive. You're hot when you're cold. Yes, senor, no. You're in, senor, out. You're up, senor, down. You're wrong, and it's right. Black and it's white. We fight, we break up. We kiss, we make up. You don't really want to stay, no. Don't really want to go. Oh, you're hot when you're cold. Yes, senor, no. You're in, senor, out. You're